This is here and now. So many of us are reflecting on our lives 20 years ago, where we were and what we did in the minutes, days, and weeks after 9/11. Mark Sasseville was a few months into his new role as Director of Operations and Lieutenant Colonel for the 121st Fighter Squadron, a unit of the District of Columbia Air National Guard. And during those crucial moments after the attacks on the World Trade Towers and the Pentagon, Sasseville and his colleagues learned of a fourth plane, Flight 93, still in progress. That's when they sprung into action. Now the National Guard's number two in command, Lieutenant General Mark Sasseville, is now looking back on the Guard's role in responding to the attacks and the role of the Guard today. Lieutenant General, welcome.
Thank you, Tanya. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Yes. Well, of course, you didn't end up intercepting Flight 93 because the passengers of that flight devised their own plan to take it down. It ultimately crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, killing everyone on board. But those passengers averted a fourth attack. Pick up for us the moments before you found all of that out, when 93 was still airborne. What was your mission?
Well, first of all, let me start by picking up where you just left off. Those people on Flight 93 are the real heroes of the day, I believe. And it's really incredible when you piece together everything that they had to go through and absorb in the heat of the moment to realize that they were part of an attack. I think that's tremendous sacrifice, and that's part of the pain and sacrifice of the past 20 years, clearly. But in the run-up to that, inside the squadron, it was a normal day. We were trying to understand exactly what was happening, and at a point, the White House Joint Operations Center called up. They let us know that there was another plane coming down the river. I'm using air quotes. And so they asked us if there was anything that we could get into the air, meaning, are there any airplanes ready? Have any pilots ready to go? And we didn't right then, but we certainly swung into action and got things moving. Clearly, after seeing what had happened, our thinking was, if there are more airplanes, we have to stop them, and we may be the only ones who can do that at this point.
You and your wingman, Heather Penny, also known as Lucky, got into your F-16s. This was a kamikaze mission, essentially. What was the conversation you two had as you set out?
Well, there wasn't, to be honest with you, a lot of conversation. We were moving so fast. I think we knew what needed to be done at that point. We didn't have missiles that were already assembled and loaded onto our airplanes. We didn't have the standard bullets that you would take into combat with you. We had training rounds, which really, frankly, don't do much against targets. And so nobody ordered us to get into the air. We knew what they were asking, though, and we weren't going to just sit idly by and wait for the missiles. So Lucky and I were getting ready to run out to the airplanes. We had a quick conversation about how we might engage an airplane, if you will, most effectively and efficiently. And it was a quick conversation about who was going to take what part of the airplane, and off we went to get into the airplanes to get in the air as soon as possible.
Your mission didn't end that day. Can you describe for us the weeks that followed? You had to fly combat air patrols 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We did. So that's not an easy feat, by the way, keeping two airplanes in the air for 24/7 for months. And that's continued to today. We're obviously not airborne the whole time, but we do have airplanes sitting on alert. The site there, my old squadron, is the busiest in the nation. We have over 6,000, I believe, events at this point where they have done some kind of reaction, and we are part of NORAD now. But those 20 years have the Guard's changed a tremendous amount over the past 20 years. We've reorganized, and we, the National Guard at large, are probably the most well-led, well-organized, and well-trained National Guard in history.
Lieutenant General, I want to talk more about the role of the National Guard and how it's grown over the last 20 years. But what were your expectations for your career before September 11th, and how did they shift or change afterward?
So I got off active duty at the 14-year point. I had a fantastic career. I enjoyed every day that I was privileged to be in uniform. And I thought that I could have the best of both worlds, frankly, a civilian career with the airlines. I was a Delta airline pilot at the time and a part-time aviator for the 121st. And so I thought that I would get to my 20 years, retire, and continue my life serving as an airline pilot. After 9/11, my outlook on life changed dramatically. My sense of purpose, my sense of duty really kind of took on a new meaning at that point when I realized, as many did that day, that our homeland was no longer sanctuary. It hadn't been before that, but I think really 9/11 brought all of that home and reinforced that notion. So that changed the trajectory of my career. I certainly didn't expect to be where I am today, I'll tell you that. But I did know that my desire to serve took on new meaning for me.
Well, you say that you didn't expect to be where you are now. You're now Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau. And the role of the National Guard is just so expansive. We're also seeing troops help with pandemic response, setting up field hospitals and mass vaccination sites, and responding more frequently to natural disasters. Going forward, do you think the National Guard could or should be more focused on domestic missions like that?
So that's a great question. I think it's important for everybody to understand, all of your listeners, that the history of the National Guard really goes back hundreds of years. And the shape it started in 1636 as a militia of the colonies has really morphed over time into what we see today. We were not always the National Guard. That's really a development over the past 100 years, let's say. And so what that means is that job number one is to answer the nation's call. And so it's a tremendous asset that the country has, that everybody has a piece of. No one person, no one entity really drives, but everybody's got a part of that. And so really your question is, where will the nation take us? What does the nation want from its National Guard? Does the nation want to continue to reap the benefits of the past 20 years of investment in terms of training and equipment and to maintain the National Guard as an operational reserve, which it has become? Because the payoffs are tremendous. And as you've seen over the past year plus, our COVID response, everything that we've been asked to do, by the way, and we haven't missed any of the taskings, either answering the nation's call and overseas deployments or a governor's request for support. Again, always ready, always there. And so really the question is, what does the country want from its National Guard going forward? And I think that's a national discussion to have.
Lieutenant General, you have a painting in your office that depicts the morning of September 11th. And it shows an F-16 pilot looking down at a burning Pentagon after Flight 77 crashed into that building. What is the daily message that painting is telling you?
So that's a great question. And I'll tell you from a personal perspective, when I look at that painting, that's the picture that I saw. The dimensions are exactly what I saw on that day. And so I'm left with two thoughts. The reminder of that day, smelling the smoke and fumes coming up from the Pentagon, from the burning Pentagon, into the cockpit. So I was that close, I could smell it. At the same time, I was getting nauseous. I realized, though, that at some point I wasn't getting nauseous because of the smoke and the fumes. I was getting nauseous because I'd realized that we'd been attacked. And we had been well attacked. This was a disaster from a military perspective. We did not defend the country that day. And so then that leads me into what I continue to hold on every day when I come to work, which is, we can never let something like that happen again. We cannot get caught by a failure of imagination. I don't think the next attack will come in the air domain. It could, right? And we're taking steps. We have taken steps over the past 20 years. There's a whole command out in Colorado Springs, NORTHCOM, that's designed to prevent that. But what I worry about is, where will the next attack come from? And I'm sure there will be. They happen every day in the cyber world, small scale ones, but where will the next big scale attack come from? And so that's why I continue to serve. I know that's why a lot of people from my generation are still in uniform, because they think that they can make a difference and that we can do something to help prevent something like that ever happening again. And I think that's really the charge for the next generation, to make sure that we don't forget our past and are condemned to repeat our future.
That's Lieutenant General Mark Sasseville, Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Tanya. Good to speak with you.